Well, hello there. This is your animal nutrition wizard and podcast host, Trinity. I wanted to say podcat host or podcats. I don't know. Anyway, I wanted to give a quick update for those who may not have seen on my Facebook page. I am currently working on my raw feeding nutrition certificate now through D&M Pro, and I recently completed and received their certificate for pet nutrition specialist. So I'm adding that to my repertoire, and once I finish my current course, I'll then be moving on to their advanced canine nutrition course, and then I have several other courses I will be taking from other experts and specialists, including Cat Lane's diet formulation, plus basics of canine nutrition audit course, and the comically named raw fed and nerdy course by expert Savannah Wellna. Just like you, I am always learning more, and I am always looking to stay up to date on my wealth of nutrition information. So I do hope you'll keep listening as my podcasts and my consultations become more and more in-depth, and as I have a wider wealth of information to draw upon as I provide guides and consults. So I will only have more to offer you in the future. Today's lesson is going to be a continuation of my basic rules of feeding a cat optimal nutrition, and I'm going to dig right into rule number 2 after I explain once more the 5 rules and a quick recap of rule number 1 for anyone who may have missed it. Really quickly, before we dig in, if you would like to know where to go to ask me questions or listen to my live Q&As, find free guides on pet nutrition, or where you can go to support the Animal Nutrition Wizard so that I can continue providing free coaching, consultations, guides, podcasts, and more, please visit my Facebook page or group, facebook.com/groups/AskTheWizard, or my page, facebook.com/AnimalNutritionWizard. My group is where you can go in and ask questions, share pet pictures, and see what other people are asking. And my page is where I share podcast updates and host a free weekly Q&A session every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can also support me at patreon.com/AskTheWizard. Okay, let's dig in. The 5 rules to feed your cat the best diet are this. Rule number 1, feed a diet high in moisture. 2, feed a diet high in named animal protein. 3, feed a diet very low in carbohydrate. 4, feed a diet that has little to no heating and processing. And rule number 5, feed a diet that has little to no synthetic additives or other unsafe ingredients. Last episode, I went over an explanation of rule number 1, which is essentially to ensure you are feeding a diet that is no less than 60% moisture content. And this is because of our cat's low thirst drive and inability to obtain adequate hydration from eating a dry diet such as kibble, which is generally about 10% moisture, and their resulting heightened susceptibility to kidney and bladder disease. Studies have shown what most feline nutritionists have already figured out on their own, which is that dilution of sediment and ammonia in the bladder through higher moisture content in the food reduces drastically the formulation of stones, crystals, UTIs, and bladder irritation overall. There are some veterinary diets that will work to break down stones that have already been formed. And in very few cases, I might recommend a temporary arrangement of feeding your cat such a food, but I would work to quickly get the cat onto a much healthier, more species-appropriate diet soon after, which includes high moisture content as soon as possible. So now for the second part of this lesson, I'd like to delve a bit into rule number 2, which sort of has 3 parts to it. So in rule number 2, I stated specifically that you must feed your cat a diet high in named animal protein. I also made it a point to include that the protein must be from an animal source, and of course, I stated the protein content must be high. So all three of these parts come together to make up this rule, and you cannot follow this rule without adhering to all three parts of it. Most cat owners already know that cats require high protein, or at least they have an inkling. Some of you may also already be aware that our domestic cats, like their wild brethren, are obligate carnivores, as I laid out in my first educational guide on my Facebook group. So I won't spend too much time on this part of the rule, as I feel confident it is either already known or won't be too much of a surprise. As obligate carnivores, cats have a few special genetic traits that make their need for animal meat undeniable and vital to their health and longevity. They have very distinct nutritional needs from dogs and many other mammals, including humans. First of all, cats have the shortest digestive tract of any mammal. It's roughly 3.5 to 4 times the length of their bodies. In cows, for comparison, their intestinal tracts are roughly 20 times the length of their bodies. You'll get different amounts from varying sources, but we have general ideas of what it's gonna look like. But we do know the cat's is the shortest. And the cat's short digestive tract and small stomach call for higher protein requirements, as I laid out in the same guide and talked about a bit in previous lessons. This is because plant matter, which is very tough with a lot of fiber, requires a large digestive system and fermentation area in the gut in order to break down and obtain nutrients from it. This is why cows and other ruminants have such long, complex digestive tracts. Cows basically have 4 stomachs because they are herbivores and they must obtain their energy and nutrient requirements from plants that take longer to break down and are therefore much harder to digest. Carnivores, like cats and dogs, have much smaller digestive tracts because their diets do not include much plant matter, and cats barely any at all. Much of the plant matter found in cats' diets comes from the innards of their prey, though they will occasionally munch on small amounts of grass or berries. The cat is designed to break down animal tissue. Cats also maintain their blood sugar levels by metabolizing fat and amino acids, and amino acids, of course, are the building blocks of protein, rather than through carbohydrates like humans do. Also, unlike dogs and humans and any other non-obligate carnivores, the cat lacks the ability to turn off their enzyme system called the aminotransferase. This system converts amino acids, which come in a wide abundance and only in full arrays from animal meat, into energy. They also cannot turn off the urea cycle enzymes, which converts ammonia to urea, which is then excreted by the kidneys, and there's a lot of ammonia in animal tissue. In the dog, a protein-deficient diet would turn these enzymes off, and enzyme induction would occur when the protein is put back into the diet. This is what allows dogs to live on, though not optimally by any means, a diet that is devoid of animal proteins. It's why we can do that as well. Cats aren't able to do that. Cats also lack the ability to convert dietary beta-carotene, which comes from plant sources, into vitamin A, which is found in animal tissue. So they do have a requirement for vitamin A, but not for beta-carotene. In nature, most vitamin A is found in the fat and liver of animals. Without going into more reasons and details on the cat's biology, it is clear that their main source of food must come from animal tissue, and because the cat's body literally never stops breaking down protein, it's important that their protein levels from animal tissue are in large quantities to ensure not only that their bodies are functioning properly, but that their bodies don't begin to steal protein from their organs and muscles and other tissue when protein is lacking in the diet. AFCO has set the minimum requirements for protein levels for adult cats at 26%, but this is a bare minimum to keep a cat alive. AFCO doesn't operate on optimal nutritional levels, only on minimum nutrition levels. So I recommend no less than 45% dry matter protein when you're feeding a commercial diet. If you have questions on how to calculate the dry matter in food, you can reach out to me directly. You can also listen to my podcast episode titled Wizardry Lesson Number 5, How to Read a Pet Food Label Part 2, where I explain this starting at about 6 minutes and 10 seconds in. You can, of course, also just do an internet search for dry matter analysis, and you can even use a dry matter analysis calculator if you want to let the web do the work for you. So some people may be concerned about having too much protein in a cat's diet. This is nearly impossible to achieve. Cats are, again, obligate carnivores, designed to quickly and efficiently break down entire animal bodies, including the meat, muscles, organs, bones, hair, eyes, etc. So they thrive on a high protein diet, and there is actually no evidence to show that high protein diets can cause health issues in cats and dogs, except in very rare circumstances. There are some older studies showing development of bladder problems in rats, and later in dogs that already have renal failure on high protein diets, but cats are not rats, and they're not dogs either. Also, newer studies show that on healthy individuals, mainly dogs and humans, that do not already have renal problems, increased protein intake does not negatively impact their renal health. Much of what vets know, why they may tell you that a high protein diet can be dangerous, what do they know about poor renal function that's associated with high protein intake mostly has to do with the Brenner hypothesis, which I would encourage you to look into. To counter this training that they've received on that, I will share with you a perfect articulation of the issue on this from a much more recent study than the Brenner hypothesis. Brenner proposed that habitual consumption of excessive dietary protein negatively impacted kidney function by a sustained increase in glomerular pressure and renal hyperfiltration. Since the majority of scientific evidence cited by the authors was generated from animal models and patients with coexisting renal disease, extension of this relationship to healthy individuals with normal renal function is inappropriate. Indeed, a relationship between increased glomerular pressure or hypofiltration and the onset or progression of renal disease in healthy individuals has not been clearly documented in scientific literature, and rather, findings from individuals with compensatory hyperfiltration during pregnancy and following unilateral nephrectomy suggest otherwise. In fact, another study done specifically on cats eating high-protein canned diets showed they were less likely to develop oxalate stones in high-quality, high-protein canned food than cats fed a low-protein, low-quality canned food. And I would also like to note that even at this date and time, which would be April of 2021, to give you a time reference, there are very, very few studies investigating the diet-dependent effects of urine composition in cats, especially with regard to stone formation. And what little studies have been done show a higher risk of stone formation in cats eating a dry diet, which, as I will go over and over again many times, is both low in moisture and high in carbohydrates and almost never high enough in animal protein. So now we've covered part one of rule number two, which is the importance of high protein in a cat's diet. I'm now going to go over the importance of ensuring the protein is coming from an animal and not a plant source. Said simply, plant-based protein sources are inferior. Many of them are also byproducts of the processing industry, and they are a cheap source of protein. These include corn gluten meal, soybean meal, and pea ingredients, to name the most common. These ingredients will boost the protein, but they're harder to digest, as cats, again, are not designed to obtain their nutrients from plant matter. Since they are often waste from human foods, the quality of these ingredients is also often very questionable. These are also products which may contain aflatoxin, which is a deadly mycotoxin or mold found mainly in corn, wheat, and soy. The presence of aflatoxin is one of, if not the biggest, health concerns in pet foods today. There have been many recalls of pet foods over the last few decades for aflatoxins, and they are generally only in pet foods containing these grains. Another important reason why you must avoid plant-based protein foods is that compared to animal proteins, they lack balance in their amino acid profiles, and they don't contain adequate levels of the essential amino acids for your cat. They contain virtually zero taurine, which is essential for cats, and we're learning maybe essential in dogs' diets as well. So they're less nutritious on the whole, and this also lends to their lower digestibility. Also, unlike animal proteins, they'll also increase the glycemic load of the food. One good trick to be aware of is that since plant-based sources don't have the full array of essential amino acids, it makes it fairly easy to spot foods that rely on lower quality plant-based proteins. If the food includes added amino acids, or what I call free amino acids, such as methionine, taurine, carnitine, lysine, or cysteine, this is a good indication that the food relies on cheaper, more sugary, less digestible plant-based sources of protein. And I'll finish talking about plant-based versus animal-based proteins by reminding you of one of the main reasons for this rule, which is the first part that I covered, and that is that cats are obligate carnivores. They're not built to obtain their nutrients from plant matter. Their bodies are perfectly adapted to obtain all of their nutrients from animal meat, organ, and bones. And this is why it makes sense that this is where they should be getting their protein. Not all protein acts the same, as different proteins are made up of different amino acids, and it is impossible for a cat, without adding in potentially toxic synthetic nutrition supplements that have no long-term studies, to obtain all of the amino acids their bodies need and in a form their body can recognize and easily utilize from plants. But this can easily and safely be done through animal protein. So we've covered now the first two parts of rule number two, and you've learned, or perhaps simply had a refresher, the fact that cats need a high protein diet and the protein must come from animals and not plants. So we'll move on to the last part of rule two, which is that the animal source of the protein must be named. This is really only going to apply to folks who are feeding their cats commercial diets, that is, ones that they're not making at home themselves, but since that is still the majority of pet owners, it is really important to know. All meats and meat meals and any food you buy your cat should have an identified source, meaning the name of the exact animal that it came from, such as chicken, turkey, duck, venison, beef, etc., and what part of the animal it is, such as liver, heart, lung. All generic or ambiguous meats and meat meals should be strictly avoided. Examples are animal meal, meat and bone meal, byproduct meal, animal byproduct meal, glandular meal, poultry byproduct meal, fish meal, and blood meal. There's probably more that I'm not naming, but if you don't know the exact animal and ingredient in that food, where it came from, don't buy that food. Anonymous protein likely means 4D meats, so roadkill, dead zoo animals, spoiled supermarket meats, sometimes coming from local farms and ranches. There are some dry food advocates that will tell you that these 4D meats never get into our pet food, but that is simply false. The vast majority of pet food is made up of human waste byproducts from our own food production facilities. The meats in animal food generally come from parts of the animals that humans would rather not eat, or animals that are diseased, or meat that is not fit for human consumption. These meals are all an indicator of questionable quality, and they are inconsistent mixtures of several protein sources. Generic meat meals give manufacturers a lot more flexibility in their ingredients without having to get a new label approved, which saves them a lot of money, but it is a very poor choice when you're trying to find your cat a high-quality protein diet, and it's especially a poor choice for cats that have allergies and intolerances and sensitivities because you have no way to know what animal proteins are in the food. The manufacturers themselves cannot tell you because the rendering plant they got the meat from probably cannot even tell you. As an example, only about 50% of a cow can be sold for human consumption, according to the FDA. The hide, the bones, digestive tract and its contents, the brain, the feces, the udders, and a bunch of various other parts are all left over after a cow is butchered. And this not fit for human consumption stuff is consolidated and shipped to rendering plants. Slaughterhouses that handle pigs and chickens will also send their leftovers to rendering plants. So do many other facilities that find themselves with large volumes of otherwise unusable dead animal parts, and that includes zoos, farms, and ranches. Sometimes roadkill can get in there too. A rendering plant has a huge grinder that is filled up with whatever comes in. Some rendering plants are picky and they will process ingredients in different batches to comply with local laws. These are the rendering plants that supply the ingredients for pet food companies that have named animal meats on their ingredients. But far too many other rendering plants just sort of dump in whatever they receive and start the grinder when it's at capacity. It's cheaper, it's faster, and it's more efficient to do it this way, but it's also way more dangerous for our pets. This material is slowly pulverized in the grinder into sort of one big blend of meat paste. It is then transferred into a vat where it is heated for several hours, somewhere between 220 to 270 degrees Fahrenheit, depending on the rendering plant, maybe higher, maybe lower. But at these temperatures, the fat and grease from the blended animal parts will float to the top, along with any other fat-soluble compounds or solids that end up getting mixed in. Most viruses and bacteria are killed during this part of the rendering process, and the fat can then be skimmed off and packaged and renamed. Most of this material left over is then called meat and bone meal. It can be used in livestock feed, in pet food, or in fertilizer. So anytime you see a generic meat or meat meal, this is likely the type of rendering plant it came from, one that uses a big medley of dead animals and chucks it in the grinder. The FDA does not really enforce the standards of quality here, as it's passed to a set of partnerships and privately owned organizations, most of which conduct no testing themselves, and many of which are in part owned by or largely influenced by pet food manufacturers themselves. So all this means, as I've stated in a previous episode, that this process is largely self-regulated, and it is why there are so many questionable and risky ingredients in our pet food at any given time. So if you're purchasing a commercially made diet, you'll want to ensure the animals within the ingredient list are all named, as this will imply a somewhat safer origin and higher quality rendering plant than foods containing ambiguous animal parts. And that covers rule number 2 of my 5 rules for feeding a cat. So as you can see, these are pretty simplistic rules all in all, but going into the reasons behind them can get complicated, and sometimes can be disheartening or even upsetting to learn about. But the more we know as pet owners, the better we can fight for our pet's health. Leaving your pet's nutrition in the hands of a multi-billion dollar industry that's pumping out billions of pounds of pet food a year is a gamble. Knowing the things I'm teaching you here will help you to make better, more informed choices about what you feed your cat or your dog, and you will become a guru, or dare I say, wizard, in your pet's dietary health options. So I will be back again soon with a new episode to continue this lesson, to talk all about rule number 3, feeding a diet that is very low in carbohydrate. Thank you all for listening so much. I appreciate you. I hope you're staying safe and staying sane still. And I know that you know what I'm going to say now, which is, remember, nutrition is magic.
Hey, listener, I'd like to tell you a bit about the Animal Nutrition Wizard. She is an independent pet nutrition coach and the host of this podcast, Trinity Thresher. She currently has certifications from Nina Liu and Holly and Hugo, 6 years of experience in the field, and does independent study and research. She provides coaching, consultations, guides, and more through donations only, whereas the average cost for a pet nutrition consultation ranges from $75 to $500. The ultimate goal is to create a nonprofit organization that provides these benefits on a larger scale, and to create a certification program for the Animal Nutrition Wizard's seal of approval for members of the pet food industry to strive to achieve. This seal would let pet owners know that products using it are safe and healthy. Your support is the driving force that helps to maintain and grow this dream. Thank you.